Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
These are movies that changed my life much more than anything else that's ever happened in my life. Sorry, wife and kids. Those movies are Time Bandits, Green Room, The Kingdom by Lars von Trier, Submarine, and With Nail and I.
Hey everyone, I'm Ian DeBorja, and welcome to the second episode of IMDb's Movies That Changed My Life, a podcast where your favorite stars break down the films that made them who they are today. First of all, I want to give a huge thank you to everyone who listened to our first episode last week and took the time to share it out, give us a star rating, or write a review for us. We're all very proud of the work we have put into this show, and we're glad that you're all enjoying it so far. But if you haven't had a chance to leave a written review on Apple Podcasts yet, please do and let us know what you think of the show, along with the movies that changed your life, and I'll read out a few of the reviews each week. This week's guest is actor, comedian, and now podcaster Joel McHale. Joel and I talked about his new podcast, The Darkest Timeline, that he hosts alongside fellow Community alumni Ken Jeong, how he has yet to see Bong Joon-ho's Parasite, among other things, and of course, the 5 movies that changed his life. Quick note before we start the show, even though this is being released on May 14th, 2020, we actually recorded this episode about 2 weeks ago before all the great news about the Community reunion table read was announced. So if you're wondering why Joel is saying he has hopes that something can be pulled together, that is why. Thanks again for listening, and here's Movies That Changed My Life featuring Joel McHale. So you started a podcast called The Darkest Timeline, which is obviously a reference to the fantastic show Community. You're what, five?
It is not a reference to that. It's a reference to a Parks and Rec episode. No, it's not. I'm just making that up.
So you have 5 episodes released. You guys do stuff on YouTube as well. Well, for those who aren't familiar, why don't you talk to us about The Darkest Timeline?
I'm not even familiar with it. Ken Jeong. Ken, as you know, is a retired actor. And he's very old now. And so I decided to help him along with his convalescence. So he is a real doctor. So we thought we should, because he and I talk a lot. And I said, we should bring our conversations to a podcast because he knows a lot about the virus and his wife is a practicing doctor. He was a doctor, a terrible one. And so let's have a thing where we have a conversation about the virus, and then we'll talk about Community probably or Masked Singer or something, because we end up our paths have crossed a lot. So it is not a Community rewatch, and I think people thought it was going to be, but instead it's just two middle-aged men yelling at each other, and so that's kind of what the premise was. And so Ken is very good at distilling information about the virus. So that makes me terribly happy. And then, you know, we had such a good time on set that we like talking about it. And it did dovetail perfectly with Netflix releasing the show again. Right. So it's so funny because people are like, I'm so happy I can finally watch it. And I was like, it's been in a lot of places. I guess it shows you the how prevalent Netflix is. So thank you, Netflix, for putting us on the front.
So I'm going to have to ask this. I can't have Joel McHale on and not ask the glaring six seasons in a movie question.
Yes.
How does this change now that Community is on Netflix? So many stars of Community have great relationships with Netflix. Is this becoming more and more of a reality every minute that goes by?
Well, I don't know if movies get willed into existence by repopularity of the show because it went to the most popular streaming service. Maybe. But there was talk about it beforehand. Now, Allison tweeted that she got a call from Sony, and I never got a call from Sony. So maybe maybe she's just going to be in it. But I would say it's more... I really kind of never thought it would ever happen, but it seems more possible now than ever. I don't know what there are so many different things that have to happen, which is, you know, Dan has to have time to write the thing. And Dan is the busiest person I know. He's got to make like 600 Rick and Morty episodes. Right. Then you've got to get the cast together all at the same time. I'm sure Donald would be a cinch to get in the movie, and I'm sure he'll be.
Yeah, he's not doing anything. What's he doing right
be
now?
Like, very affordable too, as well.
Right.
I'm under the screen. I know. I'm sure pretty much everybody. I don't know about Donald. Is up for it. I mean, Donald really does have. I mean, he's got Star Wars movies, and he's got to do Atlanta, and now, I mean, the schedules are all crazy now. So I used to say like, that'd be great. I hope so. But I always kind of thought that's never going to happen, but it might, I don't know. It would be great.
A question uniting Community and your podcast, The Darkest Timeline. The Darkest Timeline is a reference to, one of the most iconic Community episodes.
Yeah.
And it's funny, like even as Community was still pretty cult TV, and off the air at the time, The Darkest Timeline kept the show on the forefront of like internet culture.
Guys, I've been thinking about that night over and over. One thing has become clear. This is the darkest, most terrible timeline.
Enough with the timeline crap, Abed!
Just because of like the meme of Donald walking in, everything's on fire, saying the darkest timeline. And that has been repurposed, over and over and over again. Have you thought about that? About how you think like Twitter and Reddit and these memes have kept Community just like afloat among all these other new shows that were coming up as always being relevant?
God bless them. That's very nice of them, because we started the show premiered over 10 years ago. It's so cool. I love that. And I think The Darkest Timeline, I think it also, that meme took on a life of its own.
Yes.
I don't think people knew the show, but would use the meme. And the fact that I didn't set myself on fire during the shooting of that particular scene, if you look what I'm doing, I had lighter fluid just soaked on the end of a blanket, and they would say, light it. And then I would start spinning it to keep the fire away from burning down the blanket. Was not smart, but it worked. And the fact that I didn't set my hair on fire is a miracle. But what's so nice about the show is that people loved it and love it, and thank God they're discovering it despite my acting. And keep it coming, guys. I knew when I was doing it, I was good. And as an actor, it feels so good to be on something that's good. And we didn't know if anybody was going to like it or we were going to actually get out of our first season. But I knew it was good when we were making it, and that felt so good. And so I'm very proud of it, unlike nothing else in my career.
That's great. I mean, 10 years later, again, still kicking. And again, it's going to have a whole new group of fans, which I've been telling my friends for forever. You guys got to watch Community. You got to watch Community. Yeah, now it's on Netflix. So like, you have no excuse.
For some reason, they were like, yeah, I don't want to watch it. Anyway, keep telling them, and they don't.
It'll happen. All right, let's get into the movies that changed Joel McHale's life, starting with 1981's Time Bandits, directed by Terry Gilliam.
Great.
Starring a whole slew of people, not limited to Sean Connery, Shelley Duvall. who I just wrote them out because I thought they were so great. Michael Palin, all these folks, Kenny Baker.
Yeah. I mean, it's a lot of it is the Monty Python crew, right. But it is a very big departure from a Monty Python movie, obviously, but things like The Life of Brian and Holy Grail and Meaning of Life are just astonishing things that it's amazing those movies even got made, and they are beautiful. Anyway, but Time Bandits, I saw that in the theater as a child, mm-hmm. and that was before your parents. Your parents are probably my age, so, and I think the combination of fantasy and wonder, but comedy and satire, and just the science fiction of it all with them, these small people running around stealing stuff. It's such a funny, wonderful idea that if you found a way to travel through time, you just robbed people. And it's such a funny idea that they're not using it for good. They're using it for like, yeah, we want to get rich. And then of course that they drag that kid into it, and then you're off. Then the kid, I think I learned so much about what I loved about it, because it just took you away to another world, and also the comedy of it was sharp on a level that is astonishing. A scene of Ian Holm playing Napoleon, and I just find it perfect. And then the villain was so funny, and turning people into dogs and
pigs,
so
and
great.
Stuff like that. And, right?
Yeah, and the climax of the whole thing is so great. But there, I learned something about comedy in that movie and human nature in that movie because of the Robin Hood scenes with John Cleese. And I always thought, because my dad kind of looks like John Cleese, and I always thought, oh, well, that's like my dad, but that guy, that's like my dad who's in the movies. And I also learned that because in Monty Python, John Cleese would often wear a suit and he would kind of look like my dad.
Right.
And there's a scene where Robin Hood they stumble into Robin Hood's camp. They have all this gear, which Robin Hood just takes from them. And they're very reluctant about it. But then the poor show up.
Have you met the poor?
Have you met the poor? No, they're poor. And the amazing moment where he starts handing out the stuff, and the guy starts, and this is what happens, folks. This is a brutal scene, but it's so funny.
It's so good.
Where they're like, here's a beautiful gold chalice. And then they punch the poor person out after they give them. And then that keeps happening. And then John Cleese is like,
is that absolutely necessary?
Or snow at the head?
What did he say?
He says, yeah, he's afraid it is.
Oh, fine. There we are, madam. Congratulations.
Thank
well
you.
Done. Jolly good. Incidentally, would any of you like to stay on a bit and help us with our work? There's still so much wealth to redistribute.
And that taught me so much about comedy and human nature in that the poor are treated so terribly, and even when people are trying, most of the time, people, when they believe they're being good to them, are still not being good to them. That's most people, but they're obviously great. But the way they did it in such a concise and just sublime way to communicate that thought was pretty remarkable.
Yeah.
I'll never forget it.
And that's such like a Gilliam and Python thing to do, right? Like in Holy Grail, one of the best scenes is when King Arthur is riding up to a castle, and it's the people who are just moving the mud back and forth, and they talk about if it's a fiefdom, are they serfs? Is it like, I mean, they have such a brilliant way of explaining like class struggle in these completely ridiculous scenarios, and it just like hits so perfectly every single time, like no matter how like obvious they want to be, right, where they're just punching a poor person, or when they kind of go the more like philosophical route, like they do in Holy Grail. It's so good.
Yeah, no, I think, but I do think that even though it's slapstick comedy, technically, if people are getting hit,
right, literally,
there is it is a heady idea in my mind. I'm just like, whoa, I just thought it was so brilliant. And and just like, oh, that's human nature. And just to have Robin Hood being an asshole is also just
also Robin Hood's hat. I actually wrote my notes in my rewatch. I just wrote Robin Hood's hat with a star next to it because it's unnecessarily huge.
And talk about owning the screen. John Cleese just steps on. He's like, oh, by the way, I'm the greatest. Yeah.
When I was watching this, it felt very Community to me. Did you feel that?
Like Time Bandits?
Yeah. Like, I mean, every.
Yeah, no, I would agree because it starts out in a normal sort of reality and then just goes bonkers, but is always anchored and it sets up really wonderful rules for the worlds. And that's what was so great about Community is that you have this band of people that you love each other and they do care about each other, but they're in and anything else can happen around them. And that's what's great about that sandbox. I'm surprised Time Bandits hasn't been made into a TV series, or maybe it was.
So it's going to be, it's being produced for Apple TV Plus right now, actually.
Oh, it is?
Yes.
Look what I have new. Thanks for including me, Apple TV Plus.
I'm curious if, do you think they're going to go like, do you think they'll try and keep it as like, do you think they'll go full children's story or they're going to still make it like tongue in cheek, this is for kids, but it's also like, a lot of the more like really crazy stuff for adults to dig into.
That would be the good way to go down. See, as a kid, I didn't even think of it as a kid movie. I don't even think of it as a kid movie now.
Right. Yeah. Me either. I mean, it's disguised as a kid's movie.
I mean, they better keep it as wacky and sophisticated as it was. Well, and they have a lot. That's a tall order to be able to maintain that tone.
Good news is Taika Waititi is actually show running it. So,
that shows you right there that it's going to be great. That's great. He's, you know, that guy, he's so funny. And so good.
So you saw this in theaters in 81. Did you happen, like, were you already sort of invested in comedy at this point in 81? Cause this is the earliest, of the movies that you selected. Did this sort of like kind of sit in the back of your brain? And as you got more into comedy, it was always just there.
No, I mean, I had already been watching a lot of television despite what my parents. It's so funny because now my kids have all these screens and we're worried about it. I'm like, what the hell? That's what I did. And I grew up watching Sanford and Son.
Okay.
And I thought that was just one of the funniest things. When Red Fox just kept referring to his son as Dummy. And I mean, it's so funny. He's like,
one of
Dummy.
The greatest TV show theme songs of all time, too. I love
if
that
not
theme
the
song.
Yeah.
If not and the greatest. It's so good. It's
so good. And also my dad is a huge comedy fan and a really funny guy. And I'm trying to think of, like, we would watch the Bad News Bears. And when you watch that today, mm-hmm. it's kind of astonishing that
kids watch it's,
it. I want to sit the kids down and be like, this is considered a children's movie, a kid's movie. Kids went to this. Right. And it's wonderful. Boy, and so inappropriate now. I'd already seen Monty Python because it was on late at night on Channel 9 on PBS and our KCTS in Seattle. And I adored it. And I'd already heard Steve Martin's comedy albums. Eddie Murphy's movie, Delirious hadn't come out. And I don't think at that point Richard Pryor's Live on the Sunset Strip was available because that also is just an astonishing accomplishment. It wasn't like I already loved Monty Python. And when I would see those people, I would get very excited.
Yeah, the not to keep derailing, but the first time I saw Holy Grail, I think I rewound the opening coconut sequence about 10 times, like on my on my VCR. I just kept going backwards and backwards. I just could not believe what I saw. And that movie just, again, so just like funny. Blew my mind of like what comedy is. It was just so good.
If people knew the British establishment that they turned upside down, it's pretty amazing.
Let's move along to another British comedy. Yes. 1987's With Noel and I. This is directed by Bruce Robinson, starring Richard E. Grant, Paul McGann. It has a 7.7 on IMDb, 38,000 ratings. The synopsis is, in 1969, two substance-abusing unemployed actors retreat to the countryside for a holiday that proves disastrous. Pretty.
I mean, this movie... Oh, go ahead.
Oh, no. I was gonna say, I had never seen this before. And fantastic. I mean, it is such massive influence on comedy today that I'm surprised. I pride myself on a comedy fan and you know, weird movie guy, and this hadn't crossed my register, and I loved it.
Oh, good. That makes me happy. Boy, I saw this in Island Video with my friend Dominic DeLeo, who played Mankini on The Soup for 12 years.
Over on Fremont F, Island Video?
No, on Mercer Island. In Mercer Island.
Oh, on Mercer. Okay. Got it.
Then they added yogurt later on. And that's also where I first saw Stop Making Sense. It's also where I first saw Scanners. They were just running on a television there. And my friend Nick was working at the store, and he's like, this movie with Nail and I, we've got to see it. And we watched it, and it is Richard E. Grant. It's a Oscar winning performance of him being a substance abuser of almost anything, but it's so funny. It's not wacky. It's not a farce. It's about these two guys, Paul McGann, who's such a wonderful, wonderful actor. And these two guys go out to the countryside to a house that's not theirs. And it sounds very simple, but they're both aspiring actors, which is also a hard thing to, I think sometimes in movies when they're commenting on acting, mm-hmm. it can be a little bit hard to pull off, but it pulls off in spades.
Yep.
And they're so good. And Richard E. Grant's speech, he gives a short Shakespeare speech at the end when his friend kind of does well, it gets a part, and he's so happy. And Richard E. Grant is so happy for him, while at the same time is so sad for himself. He's also acts out a lot. He's always drunk. He's always high. He's getting into fights. And I can't stress to you enough that this guy, I had never heard of him. This is, I don't know, 1987, so mm-hmm. I'm 15 or 16. And so I'd never heard of this actor. And I was just like, what is this? And who is this guy? Because there's so many Oscar winning performances that are missed. And this is one of them in the biggest way. Because if it was a big time A-list studio actor who pulled that performance off, they would have gotten 9 Oscars for it.
Right.
And it's just very hard. And also, Richard E. Grant plays drunk the whole time, basically, which is also very hard to pull off. And it's a tiny little movie made by George Harrison's production company when it existed, called Handmade Films, and George Harrison from the Beatles, young people.
Who also produced Time Bandits.
And also produced Time Bandits.
You have two George Harrison selections on here.
Weird.
Yeah.
And then... it's a wonderful little movie, and it'll always be in my top. It'll always be on the top of my lot of my list, because it's really important. His Richard E. Grant, just, it is astonishing.
A fun fact about this: so Richard E. Grant apparently had never been drunk prior to making the movie, because he's allergic,
right?
And that just puts everything else as like on another level in terms of his performance. I mean, that's something that probably, you know, there wasn't like an Oscar press tour back then in the 80s like there is now. There's not these big, like, you know, for your consideration campaigns, and he still, you know, went through this process and to really hit that on the head, and it's so cool.
I forgot about that. It's very hard to play drunk.
Yes.
And it's hard to play drunk convincingly, and then you're doing all your acting stuff, and then you have the different levels of wasted that he plays throughout the thing is eerie.
The thermostats, what have you done to them?
I haven't touched them.
Then why has my head gone numb? I must have some booze. I demand to have some booze!
I wouldn't drink that if I was you.
Why not?
Because
why not?
I don't advise it. Even the wankers on the site wouldn't drink that. That's worse than meth.
Nonsense. This is a far superior drink to meths. The wankers don't drink it because they can't afford it.
So I have a question for you. You've picked two British 80s comedies. What do you think is the key differentiator between British 80s comedy and American 80s comedy?
Oh, I think as a kid, I was very taken by British comedy. And I think Monty Python had its hooks into me pretty deep. And that just made me go deeper into that stuff. I don't think it's better. I don't think it's worse. And everyone always, whenever I have... Here, people go, well, British comedy's better. I go, well, it can absolutely be great, right. But we don't get a lot of their shit. So there's a lot of crappy British comedies out there, but there's the good ones are astonishing and will be our historical documents. But it wasn't like I said, oh, I don't like American comedy. I'm not into that. I think it's just as a teenager, I was in love with that. Yeah. So,
I mean, there's just so much Python content too, right? Like obviously the movies, the Flying Circus. Did you get in the Fawlty Towers also when you were younger?
Pretty much anything that those guys touched. I was, you know, and seeing, I could have put a bunch of other Terry Gilliam films right, on the list.
Every you're all five could have been Terry Gilliam stuff.
Remember? Yeah. I mean, you can make, I mean, The Fisher King is, you know, just wonderful, funny, heartbreaking, incredible movie with two guys at the top of their game. And but the list goes on and on and on with that. I mean, Brazil alone right. is, you know, you can't, it's amazing. So I didn't have a bias against American comedy, and I saw all sorts of American comedy and, I don't know why. I think I just went down that rabbit hole.
Yeah, just
and as being kind of like an actor, alternative kid, I was always like, I'm going to go watch this movie that no one's heard of. Right. And then I was often disappointed, but often very happy. Right. Let me just ask you a movie question.
Yes, please do.
What was your favorite movie the last year?
So The Farewell is high on my list. I really, really loved that movie. I thought it was beautiful. Parasite, obviously, I really loved.
Still haven't seen it.
You haven't seen Parasite?
Is that a movie? No, yeah, I'm terrible. So I'm also like ADHD and, you know, like OCD. Sure. And I'm freaking all over the map. It's not good.
Man, Parasite lives up to the hype.
Great.
It really does.
I'll watch it tomorrow.
How about you? Did you have a favorite movie from last year?
Well, I didn't see that many.
Mm-hmm. Still, you have a favorite.
But I saw Once Upon a Time in Hollywood and I just thought it was a masterpiece. It is just astonishing. Yeah. And when I hear people go like, yeah, but there's no story, and I'm just like, so sorry that they didn't follow the formula that every movie does practically. It is
right.
remarkable.
So I have kind of a hot take on Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I think it is his most technically, his highest technical achievement as a director.
Okay.
I think he does a lot of cool stuff with cranes, like that shot where Brad Pitt is driving into the drive-thru theater and the crane falls him over the screen to his trailer. They do a couple crane stuff where they're going from, you know, Leo's house to Sharon Tate's house. The freeway stuff. How do you feel about that?
You know, the fact that you pointed it out, and now I think about it, and it is astonishing, but the fact that I didn't feel it as a way of, as so many directors do to show off, it just makes it even more remarkable.
Makes it better, right? Yeah.
Right, because
he's not flexing, he's just doing it.
Yeah, and there's so many FU shots by directors to go, look what I can do. I can do that shot that I learned in film school. And that's what, and then you go like, yeah, does it help tell the story? Obviously, a beautiful tracking shot in Goodfellas through the restaurant is, and through the kitchen does tell the story and is beautiful. And then others are just like, yeah, okay, way to go. Why'd you do it? And but the fact that I didn't even realize that those crane shots were happening I didn't feel it, but it contributes to telling the story and driving the characters. So.
The first time I watched it, I like enjoyed it a lot. But the second time I watched it, I was like, this is on another level for Tarantino. I mean,
yeah,
it's you know, you got to commit a lot of time to do it twice. I think I've seen it three times now, but it's like, every time, again, it's another movie where you just keep getting more and more out of the performances and the writing and all that sort of stuff. It's great.
My friend has watched it over 40 times.
40? 40?
He put it on every, as soon as it was available, he just put it on every night and watched it. And I was like, damn. And he's got a small kid. Anyway, thank you for letting me know on that.
This episode is brought to you by Philo. Do you love TV? Do you love saving money? Then Philo is your solution. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles. Just a better way to watch TV. Never miss a minute of shows like the hit docuseries Where is Wendy Williams? Or classics such as Friends. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like BET, MTV, and AMC. And the best part? You can try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/poppods. That's philo.tv/poppods to get 50% off your first month.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery.
So in true Python form, and now for something completely different, let's jump ahead to 2015's Green Room.
Oh, yeah.
This is a 7.0 on IMDb, 99,000 ratings.
7.0. And half of those are going to be like, I thought it was too violent. I thought it was supposed to be a horror movie. And when I hear people saying I don't like horror, I've said it. I was like, have you seen Green Room? Like, I don't like horror movies. So, and I'll be like, well, good to know. Have you seen this non-horror movie called Green Room?
A punk rock band is forced to fight for survival after witnessing a murder at a neo-Nazi skinhead bar outside of Portland, so Pacific Northwest also, shout out. Maybe not for the best reasons, but still.
beautiful location.
Yeah, beautiful location. Man, what a movie. I hadn't seen this. I think I saw it in theaters in 2015. I'm a big A24, like I'm the most embarrassing A24 fanboy. Like anything that comes out, I'm going to watch it in theaters. All my friends make fun of me for it, but it's so good. Anton Yelchin, Imogen Poots, Aaliyah Shawkat, Patrick Stewart.
Patrick Stewart as the head neo-Nazi. I mean, come on, this is, and then of course, tragic. I think it was Anton Yelchin's second to last movie
or something like that. Thoroughbreds, yeah.
And such a tragedy, because when you watch him in that movie, if Anton Yelchin played Chekhov in all the latest Star Trek movies, people out there, and he's so good. I watched him in that. It was like, oh, there's a movie star. There's a leading man right there. And it's such a tragedy. And that he's gone, because I was like, oh, I can't wait to watch this guy's career unfold. And anyway, I'm just making me cry. What I love about this movie is that once it gets a hold of you, like there's the first 10 minutes and then hold on to your hat. And I love a movie like this, almost like Run Lola Run, where the movie's going at a pace, not that it's all action the whole time or anything like that. It's just the pacing is going at a pace that you're like, I can't believe how they're keeping this up. And it is nonstop. And it's not that it's like they didn't build lulls in or something. It's just that the storytelling kind of blows the old story. It kind of just doesn't follow the regular way. And it is just one, it's a real moment that it happens in one night, and it's just, so I can't recommend it enough. Yes, there's that part of it is that the violence is so good in it, and it's on top of all this, there are some huge laughs, some of the biggest laughs that are so unexpected, and it's because it's not a comedy, and or maybe it is a comedy, and And I watched it and I was just like, I never wanted it to stop. I just wanted to keep going.
It's funny you were talking about the pacing. It takes 43 minutes until they open the green room door and the, like, basically the action really starts. 43 minutes. And during that 43 minutes, I thought it was like 4 hours because it is so tense. Every like moment, like,
that,
it's like going into it and you know, like, oh, it's a horror movie or it's like an action or whatever, or it's a thriller. Like, you're waiting at every scene seems like it's going to start right here. Oh, it's going to start here. No, it's going to start here.
Yeah.
And he makes you wait 43 minutes. I mean, the pacing of that is masterful.
When the movie ends, you're like, oh, okay. The ride is over. And I can't believe how great it was. And the violence is so wonderfully realistic. There's nothing. I mean, when what's her name? Poots. What's her? The
Imogen Poots.
Imogen Poots. When she cuts this guy open, it is unreal. It's so well done and so realistic. And I'm not. And I think some people, when I hear people go like, I don't like to see violence, I was just like, this is what would happen. And it's
right.
It's not, I swear to you, it is not gory. It is not trying to gross anything out or trying to, it's not trying to out-gore anything or trying to shock you. It's just kind of like, yeah, it seems like that's how it would go down if you did that. And again, this is one of those movies. It will never get nominated for an Oscar because it doesn't check off the boxes. And it should win all of them because it is a masterpiece.
So did you see this in theaters? Where did you, or did you see it after the fact?
No, I didn't. So there was a time when I don't see many movies in theaters because I got kids and I'm wildly busy. And so I watch a lot of stuff at home. And so my friend Boyd was just like, you need to sit and watch it. And you need to watch it on the biggest screen and turn it up. And boy, was he right.
My other note in this is, do you think this would work if Patrick Stewart was not the head neo-Nazi, if they had gotten another actor? Or do you think this movie really, really works because it's him?
I mean, no offense to Patrick Stewart, because he's literally one of the greatest actors ever to live. Absolutely, the movie would work. Yeah, it's not like because his part is not like George C. Scott in Patton, where you need this, or like Forrest Gump, or like Tom Hanks. I think Patrick Stewart would agree with me that, you know, that I mean, obviously he makes the movie so good, but no, this movie absolutely would be fine, and I don't know why he didn't cast me as Patrick Stewart.
I hope you're enjoying this week's episode of Movies That Changed My Life. If you are, don't forget to hit the subscribe button to make sure that you get all of our upcoming episodes as soon as they are available, because if I do say so myself, we have some awesome guests coming on to talk about equally awesome movies like Elle Fanning on Grease, Judy Greer on Casablanca, and Kevin Smith on Reservoir Dogs. Thanks again for listening. Be sure to check out imdb.com/podcasts for more content. Now let's get back to Movies That Changed My Life with Joel McHale. All right, so let's talk about the next movie. Another movie I hadn't seen. It's 2010's Submarine.
How often do I stump you? How often do you get stumped?
In terms of movies I hadn't seen?
Yeah.
I'm generally pretty good. With Nail and I had heard of. Submarine I'd heard of, but I had not seen either. But I'm generally pretty good. And I was a huge fan of Submarine. This came out in 2010, 7.3. Nice. 82,000 ratings on IMDb. A coming-of-age story about Oliver Tate as he tries to balance his first love and the saving of his parents' relationship. Written and directed by Richard Ayoade, who is...
Ayoade,
yeah, I think I got it. Talk to me about it. Talk to me about Submarine.
This is one of those movies, again, where it should have been nominated for 1,000 different Oscars, but it didn't get the press that goes along with a quirky British film. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it catches fire, especially if it has big stars in it, and it didn't have big stars. And, but it is, someone put it like, it's the best coming of age movie since Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Mm. And I could not agree with it more on it's like saying if Ferris Bueller's Day Off is an Italian meal, submarine is the best sushi meal you've ever had. They're just they're still a meal, but they're very different. And this movie is just so innovative, so wonderfully sweet, and so funny. And I say sweet in the best way because it really is about these two kids falling in love and coming of age and learning about themselves and their parents dealing with really heavy stuff. And Richard Ayoade, who, full disclosure, I know.
Yeah, we'll talk, about that.
Right. That's why I saw it, because he's like, oh, I've got a little movie coming out. You see it? And it is just, it's innovative, and it has these fanciful moments, and then has these, but it's such good filmmaking, and none of it is indulgent trying to communicate, like this is the important part, none of that. And the acting is really, so, and then there are really, it's very, in a movie like this, where there is real themes and kids with real feelings, and it's a comedy, hard thing to pull off. For so, like, there's this scene where he's eating dinner at his new love's house, and her mom has cancer, and it's already getting heavy, and it's Christmas dinner, and the father gives a speech where he begins crying. But so, I mean, this is a heavy scene. But in the background, there's a Christmas tree. And the Christmas tree, as he starts giving the speech, it's very subtle, but it flickers. And he's still giving the speech, and he's losing it. It flickers again. And he's still giving the speech, and he's getting more emotional. It flickers again. It's not supposed to be flickering. And then the dad, like, you don't even see it coming. The dad just fucking loses it and runs over and tackles the Christmas tree. And it's that sort of like, oh my gosh, you jumped over 25 laser security beams to get to that prize. It's like one of those movies that just pierces your heart without even you knowing it. And so when you think about it, you go, yeah, that movie. So yeah, I just love it.
I also loved like how very meta it was. You know, the lead character, Oliver, he sort of tells his life story as if he was shooting a biopic. And he talks about how, you know, this would be my document. Maybe I'm in a documentary and this is the beach. And it shows like a really like very, you know, set up shot of him on the beach, or where he says, you know, right now I would love to have a dolly zoom out, a crane come out from above me, but I don't have that in my budget. So it's just like a, you know, a zoom out standard. I mean, it's very lots of tongue in cheek.
Which is such a thing a kid does, which is right. Like, I'm in my own movie right now.
Right.
It's like a kid who's like, no, I've got my own theme music, and I hum it to myself. That's right. That's so real. Like a real, it's such what a kid does.
And like the performances across the board are so, so good. I mean, obviously Noah Taylor and Sally Hawkins are well-known names. They're fantastic. But Patty Considine as Graham Purvis, Craig Roberts as Oliver Tate, Yasmin Page as Jordana. I mean, it's so good and so subtle, and nothing is like overdone. It really like pulls nothing's at your strings done. In the right way.
I can't recommend it enough. And when movies like this get made and look like that, it just gives me hope for all cinema, where I'm like, yes, great stuff is still being made.
So director Richard Ayoade, he directed episode Community, season 2, episode 19, Critical Film Studies. Iconic episode featuring you and Abed having a pretty hilarious scene. What is it?
My Dinner with Andre parody.
Yes, My Dinner with Andre.
And we did a Pulp Fiction parody.
And the Pulp Fiction parody. It's funny.
No, that was all in the same episode. And right. Richard is, he's such a good director. I mean, I knew him because we did the American version of the IT Crowd, which only got to the pilot stage, which was probably good because I would have been eaten alive probably. he's such a nice man. A. B. He's 6'9" or whatever. He's a very tall man, but he's just so funny, and he has got the sensibility he has is astonishing. So I hate even talking about him like this, because if he hears about it, he's going to be like, why did you say those things? So he's not somebody that takes a compliment at all.
Yeah, I mean, it's shocking to me that he's only directed two feature films because
Submarine
is so brilliant. I'd love to see him do more.
And The Double is so great. And I wish there was just much more for him. Dear God. Richard, please start directing some more movies.
Please, from both of us. Last movie here then, kind of TV show too, depending on how you watched it, is The Kingdom. This
technically it is a television show, right?
Yeah, technically it is a TV show, directed and written by Lars von Trier. This has an 8.3 on IMDb, 16,000 ratings. The synopsis is, doctors at an ultra-modern hospital in Denmark become convinced by way of weird, inexplicable happenings that the place is haunted. Talk to me. What?
It's, I don't know if you've ever seen it. It's 8 hours long. About 8 hours long. It's eight television episodes put together into two movies. And I saw it at the Seattle Film Festival in 1995, three. And I believe it won the festival. And I believe it did. Anyway, it was my introduction to Lars von Trier, and I was blown away. And I can't recommend it enough, because you can see what a brilliant filmmaker he is. I mean, obviously he's had his issues and he said some pretty dumb shit, but he can make a movie, man. And a haunted hospital sounds like it's going to be some kind of horror film, and it's basically a comedy, but it got a lot of heavy themes. And so it's like life in that way, that there's comedy, there's drama, and it's slowly dawning on them this place is haunted. And he uses two people who are experiencing Down syndrome to communicate between human, the living and the dead. And it works really well. And the character subtleties and the work, and then you see, so it's a Danish hospital, and there's like Swedish doctors there that hate the Danes and they hate the Swedes, and they yell at it. They keep it bottled in. And it's just, I can't recommend it. Watch it over like a few days to treat it as a television show, because it works. It works really well. You don't have to sit there for 4 hours, but I just remember being very, I think he did Breaking the Waves next after that, which is an amazing movie that when I saw it, I was like, that was incredible. I don't think I can see it again. But The Kingdom is really worth it. If you can, when I hear people say they don't want to read subtitles and want to throw them through the, it's just like, you know what? I'm super dyslexic. I have trouble reading too, but come on. Give me a break. There's an entire world out there that doesn't speak English, so get used to it. And that's good, and it's part of it makes movies wonderfully different. Anyway, thank you. I'm Joel McHale.
So when you watched it at SIFF, it did win in 95, by the way. You watch it in 4 hours in one sitting?
Yes, I watched it all in one day. It was two chunks at the Guild 45th Theater.
Oh, that's closed now. It's such a shame.
Is it? I mean, yeah. This is every single small movie theater. This is, so you kids out there, just so you know, movie theaters did not used to be multiplexes. It's all great. Multiplexes are fine. And thank God for... thank God for his chairs to lean back in, and you can finally drink a beer. All that's all great, and I'm very happy about that. But there was a time when movie houses, and they would show really crazy stuff. I saw the Crumb documentary at the Guild 45th, and which is highly disturbing. Saw all these wonderful little movies, and it's just not the way that, I mean, movies, they're always going to be independent cinema, but anyway, so... I watched the whole thing in one day, and I was one of the things where I was like, keep it going. I'm in. There was no chore happening. There's movies that are long and you're like, it's a good thing I watched that. That was important. And that I don't need to watch it again, but now I can go tell my friends that I saw it. And, this is one of those things. I was just like, keep it going.
Right.
It's so good. So watch it, please. And when someone said, I saw a review that was like, it's like ER on acid. I'm like, no, it's not. It's not like ER on acid.
It may not be ER on acid, but it is definitely worth the watch. Again, that is The Kingdom, directed by Lars von Trier. And there we have it, the five movies that changed Joel McHale's life. Before we go, I want to make sure we talk about your upcoming project, which is a new thing for you. You're going to be playing Sylvester Pemberton in the CW's upcoming DC Universe TV show, Stargirl.
I'm very excited, and I always wanted to be in the superhero thing, and then I got to be, and it was so I couldn't believe I was so happy they cast me. My part is relatively small. I'm hoping because I passed the torch literally to Stargirl in the first episode. Sure. I'm not spoiling anything, and but it was just so much fun to be on that set, and all my scenes were with Luke Wilson, and he's such a good actor and so nice. And I was thrilled to be there. And I got to do the, I felt like I had won the lottery, and I was like, oh, here's what I get to be in a superhero movie for a very short version of it. So I got to be suspended. So it was really fun. And I think the show is really, really high quality. And the lead's just amazing. She's so great. So I think I'm in something good. So
yeah, the Arrowverse and DC's TV stuff, they do something right. All those shows, they really capture like what works for the superhero like TV model. And I'm sure Star was going to hit the same. Thank you so much for hanging out. So we talked about Time Bandits.
Thank you. And we didn't talk about Spy Kids 4. What the fuck, dude? No. Hey, thank you. That's really fun. And you're very thoughtful. And what movie should I watch tomorrow other than Parasite?
You definitely should watch Parasite. Did you watch Midsommar last year?
No, Midsommar, I gotta watch that.
Both of those, Midsommar and Parasite, were awesome. Awesome movies.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Great, great, great. Go, did you ever see Breakdown?
Breakdown, no.
With Kurt Russell?
No. 1997, right, cool. Kurt Russell, J.T. Walsh. I will add that to my list.
Go watch that.
Boom.
And don't stop it.
All right. Thanks again for listening. We will be back next Thursday with the great Elle Fanning. And if you want more information about Joel and his picks, visit imdb.com/podcasts.